question. The younger man fidgets.
Raj and Navid, he says after a pause. New recruits. Said they were working on something big. Aaron found their bodies in the west end of the Scholars' Quarter this morning. I heard a few minutes ago.
Mazin swears and turns back to me.
Why would my men give the Empire your brother's name? How do they know him?
If Mazin doesn't know about the sketchbook, I'm not about to tell him. I don't understand what it means myself. I don't know, I say. Maybe they wanted him to join. Maybe they were friends. Whatever the reason, they led the Empire to us. The mask who killed them came for Darin last night. He... My voice fails, but I clear my throat and force myself to keep talking. He killed my grandparents. He took Darin to jail. Because of your men! Mazin takes a long draw on his pipe, contemplating me before shaking his head.
I'm sorry for your loss, truly. But we can't help you.
You owe me a blood debt. Your men gave up Darin.
And paid for it with their lives. You can't ask for more than that.
The little interest Mazin took in me disappears.
If we helped every scholar taken by the marshals, there'd be nothing left of the resistance. Maybe if you were one of our own, he shrugs. But you're not.
What about Izzat? I grab his arm, and he pulls away, anger flashing in his eyes. You're bound to the code. Bound to aid any who...
The code applies to our own. Members of the resistance. Their families. Those who have given everything for our survival. Keenan, give her the leaf.
Keenan takes one of my arms, holding on tightly even when I try to throw him off. Wait, I say. You can't do this. Another fighter comes to restrain me. You don't understand. If I don't get him out of prison, they'll torture him. They'll sell him or kill him. He's all I have. He's the only one left. Mazin keeps walking.
Chapter 8 Elias. The whites of the augur's eyes are demon red, vivid against his jet irises. His skin stretches across the bones of his face like a tortured body on the rack. Other than his eyes, he has no more color to him than the translucent spiders that lurk in Sarah's catacombs. Nervous, Elias. The augur pushes my knife away from his throat. Why? You needn't fear me. I'm only a cave-dwelling charlatan, a reader of sheep's entrails, yes? Burning, bleeding skies. How does he know I thought such things? What else does he know? Why is he even here? That was a joke, I say hastily. A stupid, stupid joke. Your plan to desert. Is that a joke also? My throat tightens. All I can think is, how does he... Who told him? I'll kill them! The ghosts of our misdeeds seek vengeance, the augur says. But the cost will be high. The cost? It takes me a second to understand. He's going to make me pay for what I was planning to do. The night air is colder suddenly, and I remember the din and stench of Koff Prison, where the Empire sends defectors to suffer at the hands of its most ruthless interrogators. I remember the Commandant's whip and Barius's blood staining the courtyard stones. My adrenaline surges, my training kicking in, telling me to attack the Augur, to rid myself of this threat. But common sense overrules instinct. The augurs are so highly respected that killing one isn't an option. Grovelling, however, might not hurt. I understand, I say. I will humbly accept any punishment you deem. I am not here to punish you. In any case, your future is punishment enough. Tell me, Elias, why are you here? Why are you at Blackcliff? To carry out the will of the Emperor. I know these words better than my own name. I've said them so many times. To keep away threats, internal and external, to protect the Empire. The auger turns to the diamond-patterned bell tower. The words emblazoned in the tower's bricks are so familiar, I hardly notice them anymore. From among the battle-hardened youth, there shall rise the foretold, the greatest emperor, scourge of our enemies, commander of a host most devastating, and the empire shall be made whole. The foretelling, Elias, the augur says. The future given to the augurs in visions. That is the reason we built this school. That is the reason you are here. Do you know the story? The story of Blackcliff's origin was the first thing I learned as a yearling. 500 years ago, a warrior brute named Tyus united the fractured martial clans and swept down from the north, crushing the Scholar Empire and taking over most of the continent. He named himself Emperor and established his dynasty. He was called the Masked One, with the unearthly silver mask he wore to scare the hell out of his enemies. But the augurs, considered holy even then, saw in their visions that Tyus's line would one day fail. When that day came, the augurs would choose a new emperor through a series of physical and mental tests, the trials. For obvious reasons, Tyus didn't appreciate this prediction. But the augurs must have threatened to strangle him with sheep gut, because he didn't make a peep when they raised Blackcliff and began training students here. And here we all are, 5 centuries later, masked just like Tyus the First, waiting for the old devil's line to fail so one of us can become the shiny new emperor. I'm not holding my breath. Generations of masks have trained and served and died without a whisper of the trials. Blackcliff may have started out as a place to prepare the future emperor, but now it's just a training ground for the Empire's deadliest asset. I know the story, I say in response to the augur's question, but I don't believe a word of it, since it's mythical horse dung.
Neither mythical nor horse dung, I'm afraid, the augur says soberly.
It becomes harder to breathe suddenly. I haven't felt fear in so long that it takes me a second to recognize it. You can read minds.
A simplistic statement for a complex endeavor. But yes, we can.
Then you know everything. My plan to escape, my hopes, my hates, everything. No one turned me into the augur. I turned myself in.
It's a good plan, Elias, the augur confirms. Nearly foolproof. If you wish to carry it out, I will not stop you.
Trick! My mind screams. But I look into the augur's eyes and see no lie there. What game is he playing? How long have the augurs known that I want to desert?
We've known for months. But it wasn't until you hid your supplies in the tunnel this morning that we understood you had committed yourself. We knew then we had to speak with you.
The augur nods to the path that leads to the eastern watchtower.
Walk with me.
I'm too numb to do anything but follow. If the augur isn't trying to keep me from deserting, then what does he want? What did he mean when he said my future would be punishment enough? Is he telling me I'll be caught? We reach the watchtower, and the sentries stationed there turn and walk away, as if following a silent order. The augur and I are alone, looking out over darkened sand dunes that stretch all the way to the Seren mountain range.
When I hear your thoughts, I'm reminded of Tyus the First, the augur says. Like you, soldiering was in his blood, and like you, he struggled with his destiny.
The augur smiles at my stare of disbelief.
Oh, yes. I knew Tyus. I knew his forefathers. My kindred and I have walked this land for 1,000 years, Elias. We chose Tyus to create the Empire, just as we chose you, 500 years later, to serve it.
Impossible, my logical mind insists. Shut it, logical mind. If this man can read minds, then immortality seems like the next reasonable step. Does this mean all that drivel about the augurs being possessed by spirits of the dead is true? If only Helene could see me, how she'd gloat. I watch the augur out of the corner of my eye. As I take in his profile, I find that it's suddenly, oddly familiar.
My name is Cain, Elias. I brought you to Blackcliff. I chose you.
Condemned me, more like. I try not to think of the dark morning the Empire claimed me, but it haunts my dreams still. The soldiers surrounding the Scythe caravan, dragging me from my bed. Mamie Reela, my foster mother, shrieking at them until her brothers pulled her back. My foster brother, Sean, rubbing the sleep from his eyes, bewildered, asking when I would return. And this man, this thing, pulling me to a waiting horse with the barest explanation.
You've been chosen. You will come with me.
In my terrified child's mind, the augur seemed larger, more menacing. Now he comes to my shoulder and looks as if a stiff wind could knock him into the grave. I imagine you've chosen thousands of children over the years. I take care to keep my tone respectful. That's your job, isn't it?
But you are the one I remember best. For the augur's dream, the future, all outcomes, all possibilities. And you are woven through every dream, a thread of silver in a tapestry of night.
And here I thought you drew my name out of a hat.
Hear me, Elias Vittorius.
The augur ignores my barb, and though his voice is no louder than it was a moment ago, his words are wrapped in iron, weighted down in certainty.
The foretelling is truth, a truth you will soon face. You seek to run. You seek to abandon your duty. But you cannot escape your destiny.
Destiny? I laugh, a bitter thing. What destiny? Everything here is blood and violence. After I graduate tomorrow, nothing will change. The missions, the rote viciousness, will wear me down until there's nothing left of the boy the augur stole 14 years ago. Maybe that's a type of destiny, but it's not one I'd choose for myself.
This life is not always what we think it will be, Cain says. You are an ember in the ashes, Elias Vittorius. You will spark and burn, ravage and destroy. You cannot change it. You cannot stop it.
I don't want...
What you want doesn't matter. Tomorrow, you must make a choice. Between deserting and doing your duty. Between running from your destiny and facing it. If you desert, the augurs will not stop you. You will escape. You will leave the Empire. You will live. But you will find no solace in doing so. Your enemies will hunt you. Shadows will bloom in your heart, and you will become everything you hate. Evil, merciless, cruel. You will be chained to the darkness within yourself, as surely as if chained to the walls of a prison cell.
He moves toward me, his black eyes pitiless.
But if you stay, if you do your duty, You have a chance to break the bonds between you and the Empire forever. You have a chance at greatness you cannot conceive. You have a chance at true freedom, of body and of soul.
What do you mean, if I stay and do my duty? What duty?
You'll know when the time comes, Elias. You must trust me.
How can I trust you when you won't explain what you mean? What duty? My first mission? My second? How many scholars will I have to torment? How much evil will I commit before I'm free?
Cain's eyes are fixed on my face as he takes one step away from me, and then another.
When can I leave the Empire? In a month? A year? Cain!
He fades as quickly as a star into the dawn. I reach out to grab him, to force him to stay and answer me. But my hand finds only air.
Chapter 9. Liar. Heenan pulls me to a cabin door, and I hang limp, my breath gone from my body. His mouth moves, but I can't hear what he's saying. All I can hear are Darin's screams, echoing in my ears. I'll never see my brother again. The marshals will sell him if he's lucky, and kill him if he's not. Either way, there's nothing I can do about it. Tell them, Leia, Darin whispers in my head. Tell them who you are. They might kill me, I argue back. I don't know if I can trust them. If you don't tell them, I'll die, Darin's voice says. Don't let me die, Leia. The tattoo on your neck, I shout at Mazin's retreating back. The fist and flame? My father put it there. You are the second person he tattooed after my mother. Mazin stops. His name was John. You called him Lieutenant. My sister's name was Liss. You called her the Little Lioness. For a second I falter, and Mazin turns around, a muscle in his jaw jumping. Speak, liar. He's actually listening. My mother's name was Mira. But you, everyone, called her the Lioness, leader, head of the Resistance. Keenan releases me as quickly as if my skin has turned to ice. Sunna's gasp echoes in the sudden silence of the cavern. She'll know now why she'd found me familiar. I glance around at the shocked faces uneasily. My parents were betrayed from within the Resistance. Nan and Pop never learned who it was. Mazin says nothing. Please, don't let him be the traitor. Let him be one of the good ones. If Nan could see me, she'd throttle me. I've kept the secret of my parents' identities all my life. Telling it makes me feel hollow inside. And what happens now? All of these rebels, many of whom fought alongside my parents, suddenly know whose child I am. They'll want me to be fearless and charismatic, like mother. They'll want me to be brilliant and serene, like father. But I'm not any of those things. You served with my parents for 20 years, I say to Mazin. In Marin, and then here, in Sarah. You joined up the same time as my mother. You rose to the top with her and my father. You were third in command. Keenan's eyes flash between Mazin and me, the rest of his face still. Work in the cabin halts, and fighters whisper to each other as they gather around us. Mira and John had one child. Mazin limps toward me. His eyes go from my hair, to my eyes, to my lips as he remembers, compares.
She died when they did.
No. I've held this in for so long that it feels wrong to speak of it. But I have to. It is the only thing I can say that might make a difference. My parents left the resistance when Lys was 4. They were expecting Darin. They wanted a normal life for their children. They disappeared. No trace. No trail. Darin was born. Then, 2 years later, I arrived. But the Empire was coming down hard on the resistance. Everything my parents worked for was crumbling. They couldn't sit by and watch. They wanted to fight. Lys was old enough to stay with them, but Darin and I were too young. They left us with Mother's parents. Darin was 6. I was 4. They died a year later.
You tell a good tale, girl, Mazin says. But Mira didn't have parents. She was an orphan, like me. Like John.
I'm not telling tales. I pitch my voice low so it doesn't shake. Mother left home when she was 16. Nan and Pop didn't want her to go. After she left, she cut off all contact. They didn't even know she was alive until she knocked on their door asking them to take us in.
You're nothing like her.
He might as well have slapped me. I know I'm not like her. I want to say. I cried and cringed instead of standing and fighting. I abandoned Darin instead of dying for him. I'm weak in a way she never was.
Mazin, Sana whispers, like I'll disappear if she speaks too loudly.
Look at her. She has John's eyes. His hair. Ten Hells. She has his face.
I swear it's true. This armlet...
I lift my hand and it glints in the cavern's light.
It was hers. She gave it to me a week before the Empire caught her.
I'd wondered what she'd done with it.
The stiffness in Mazin's face dissolves, and the light of an old memory flares in his eyes.
John gave it to her when they got married. I never saw her without it.
Why didn't you come to us before? Why didn't your grandparents contact us? We'd have trained you up the way Mira would have wanted.
The answer dawns on his face before I can say it.
The traitor, he says.
My grandparents didn't know who to trust. They decided not to trust anyone.
And now they're dead. Your brother is in jail, and you want our help.
Mazin brings his pipe back to his mouth. We must give her aid. Sana is beside me, her hand on my shoulder. It's our duty. She's, as you say, one of our own. Tarek stands behind her, and I notice that the fighters have divided into two groups. The ones backing Mazin are closer to Keenan's age. The rebels, clustered behind Sana, are older. She's the head of our faction, Tarek had said. Now I realize what he meant. The resistance is divided. Sana leads the older fighters, and, as she'd hinted at before, Mazin leads the younger ones, and serves as overall leader. Many of the older fighters stare at me, perhaps searching my face for evidence of mother and father. I don't blame them. My parents were the greatest leaders in the resistance's 500-year history. Then they'd been betrayed by one of their own, caught, tortured, executed along with my sister, Lys. The resistance collapsed and never recovered. If the lioness's son is in trouble, we owe it to her to help, Sana says to those gathered behind her.
How many times did she save your life, Mazin? How many times did she save all of us?
Suddenly, everyone is talking.
Mira and I set fire to an Empire garrison. She could cut right to your soul with her eyes, the lioness. Saw her fend off a dozen oxes once. Not a bit of fear in her.
I have stories of my own. She wanted to leave us. She wanted to abandon her children for the resistance. But father wouldn't let her. When they fought, Lys took me and Darin into the forest and sang so we wouldn't hear them. That's my first memory. Lys singing me a song while the lioness
raged a few yards away. After my parents left us with Nan and Pop, it took weeks for me to stop feeling jumpy, to get used to living with two people who actually seemed to love each other. I say none of this. Instead, knotting my fingers together as the fighters tell their stories. I know they want me to be brave and charming, like Mother. They want me to listen, really listen, like Father. If they learn what I truly am, they'll throw me out of here without a thought. The Resistance doesn't tolerate weaklings.
Liar, Mazin speaks over them, and they quiet down. We don't have the manpower to break into a martial prison. We'd risk too much.
I don't get the chance to protest because Sun is speaking for me. The lioness would have done it for you without a second thought.
We have to bring down the Empire, a blonde man behind Mazin says. Not waste our time saving some boy.
We don't abandon our own. We'll be the ones doing all the fighting.
Another of Mazin's men calls in the back of the crowd.
Well, you old-timers sit around taking all the credit.
Tarik shoves past Sana, his face dark.
You mean while we plan and prepare to make sure you young fools don't get ambushed?
Enough! Enough!
Mazin raises his hands. Sana pulls Tarik back and the other fighters fall silent.
We won't solve this by shouting at each other. Keenan, find Hyder and bring him to my chambers. Sana, get Eren and join us. We'll decide this privately.
Sana hurries away, but Keenan doesn't move. I flush beneath his stare, not sure what to say. His eyes are almost black in the cabin's dim light. I see it now, he murmurs, as if to himself. I can't believe I almost missed it. He can't have known my parents. He doesn't look much older than me. I wonder how long he's been in the Resistance, but before I ask, he disappears into the tunnels, leaving me to stare after him. Hours later, after I forced food down my throat and pretended to sleep on a rock-hard bunk after the stars had faded and the sun has risen, one of the cabin doors swings open. Mazin enters, followed by Keenan, Sana, and two younger men. The Resistance leader limps to a table where Tarik is sitting and gestures me over. I try to read Sana's face as I join them, but her expression is carefully neutral. The other fighters gather around, as interested as I am to see what my fate will be.
Liar,
Mazin says.
Keenan here thinks we should keep you in camp. Safe,
Mazin infuses the word with scorn. Beside me, Tarik looks askance at Keenan.
She'll cause less trouble here. The red-haired fighter's eyes flash. Breaking her brother out will cost men. Good men.
He stops at a look from Mazin and clamps his mouth shut. And though I hardly know Keenan, I'm stung at how violently he's opposing me. What have I ever done to him?
It will cost good men, Mazin says. Which is why I've decided that if Lyra wants our help, she has to be willing to give us something in return.
Fighters from both factions eye their leader warily. Mazin turns to me.
We'll help you, if you help us.
What could I possibly do for the Resistance?
You can cook, yes? Mazin asks. And clean? Dress hair, press clothing?
Make soap, wash dishes, barter, yes! You've just described every free woman in the Scholar's Quarter.
You can read too, Mazin says.
When I begin to deny the charge, he shakes his head.
Empire rules be damned. You forget I knew your parents.
What does any of that have to do with helping the Resistance?
We'll break your brother out of prison if you spy for us.
For a moment, I don't speak. Though I feel a tug of curiosity, this is the last thing I expected.
Who do you want me to spy on?
The Commandant of Blackcliff Military Academy.
Chapter 10 Elias. The morning after the Augur's visit, I stumbled to the mess hall like a cadet suffering his first hangover, cursing the overly bright sun. What little sleep I got was sabotaged by a familiar nightmare, one in which I wander through a stinking, body-strewn battlefield. In the dream, screams rend the air, and somehow I know that the pain and suffering are my fault, that the dead have fallen by my hand. Not the best way to start a day, especially graduation day. I run into Helene as she, Dex, Faris, and Tristus leave mess. She stuffs a rock-hard biscuit into my hand, ignoring my protests, and pulls me away from the hall. We're late. I barely hear her over the ceaseless beating of the drums, which are ordering all graduates to the armory to pick up our ceremonials, the armor of a full mask. Demetrius and Leander already left. Helene chatters about how thrilling it will be to put on our ceremonials. Dimly, I listen to her and the others, nodding at appropriate times, exclaiming when necessary. All the while, I'm thinking of what Cain said to me last night. You will escape. You will leave the Empire. You will live. But you will find no solace in doing so. Do I trust the Augur? He could be trying to trap me here, hoping I'll stay a mask long enough to decide that a soldier's life is better than an exile's. I think of how the Commandant's eyes shine when she whips a student, how Grandfather boasts of his body count. They are my kin. Their blood is my blood. What if their lusts for war and glory and power are mine too, and I just don't know it? Could I learn to revel in being a mask? The Augur read my thoughts. Does he see something evil inside me that I'm too blind to face? But then, Cain seemed convinced that I'd meet the same fate if I deserted. Shadows will bloom in your heart, and you will become everything you hate. So my choices are to stay and be evil, or to run and be evil. Wonderful. When we are halfway to the armory, Hel finally notices my silence, taking in the rumpled clothing, the bloodshot eyes. You all right? She asks. Fine. You look like hell. Rough night. What happened? Faris, walking ahead with Dex and Tristus, drops back. Leave him alone, Aquila. The man's tuckered out. Snuck down to the docks to celebrate a bit early, eh, Veturius? He claps me on the shoulder with a big hand and laughs. Could have invited a fellow along. Don't be disgusting, Helene says. Don't be a prude, Faris retorts. A full-scale argument ensues, during which Helene's disapproval of prostitutes is vehemently shouted down by Faris, while Dex argues that leaving school grounds to visit a brothel isn't strictly forbidden. Tristus points to the tattoo of his fiancée's name and declares neutrality. Amid the swiftly flung insults, Helene's gaze slides to me repeatedly. She knows I don't frequent the docks. I avoid her eyes. She wants an explanation. But where would I even begin? Well, you see, Hel, I wanted to desert today, but this damn Augur showed up, and now... When we arrive at the armory, students spill out the front doors, and Faris and Dex disappear into the crush. I've never seen the senior skulls so... happy. With liberation just a few minutes away, everyone is smiling. Skulls I barely ever speak to greet me, clap me on the back, joke with me. Elias! Helene! Leander, his nose crooked from the time Helene broke it, calls us over. Demetrius stands beside him, grim as always. I wonder if he feels any joy today. Maybe he's just relieved to leave the place where he watched his brother die. When he sees Helene, Leander self-consciously runs his hand over his curly hair, which sticks up all over the place, no matter how short he cuts it. I try not to smile. He's liked her for ages, though he pretends not to.
Armorer already called your names.
Leander nods to two stacks of armor and weaponry behind him.
We grabbed your ceremonials for you.
Helene goes for hers like a jewel thief for rubies, holding the bracers to the light, exclaiming how Blackcliff's diamond symbol is seamlessly hammered into the shield. The close-fitting armor is forged by the Teluman smithy, one of the oldest in the Empire, and is strong enough to turn away all but the finest blades. Blackcliff's final gift to us. Once the armor is on, I strap on my weaponry. Sims and daggers of Ceric steel, razor sharp and graceful, especially compared to the dull, utilitarian weapons we've used until now. The last piece is a black cape held in place by a chain. When I'm done, I look up to see Helene staring at me. What? I say. Her expression is so intent that I glance down, assuming I've put my chest plate on backward. But everything is where it should be. When I look back up, she's standing before me, adjusting my cape, her long fingers brushing my neck.
It wasn't straight.
She dons her helmet.
How do I look?
If the augurs made my armor to accentuate my body's power, they made Hell's to accentuate her beauty.
You look
like a warrior goddess, like a genie of air come to bring us all to our knees.
Skies, what the hell is wrong with me?
Like a mask, I say. She laughs, girlish and preposterously alluring, drawing the attention of other students. Leander, who jerks his gaze away and rubs his crooked nose guiltily when I catch him looking. Varys, who grins and mutters something to an appraising Dex. Across the room, Zack stares too, the expression on his face something between longing and puzzlement. Then I see Marcus beside Zack, watching his brother as his brother watches Hell.
Look, boys, Marcus says, a bitch in armor.
My sim is half-drawn when Hell puts a hand on my arm, her eyes flashing fire at me. My fight, not yours.
Go to hell, Marcus.
Helene finds her cape a few feet away and dons it. The snake ambles over, his eyes creeping down her body, leaving no doubt as to what he's thinking.
Armor doesn't suit you, Aquila, he says. I prefer you in a dress, or nothing at all.
He lifts a hand to her hair, wrapping a loose tendril gently around his finger, before yanking it hard, pulling her face toward his. It takes me a second to recognize the snarl that splits the air as my own. I'm a foot from Marcus, my fists hungry for his flesh, when two of his toadies, Thaddeus and Julius, grab me from behind, wrenching my arms back. Demetrius is beside me in a second, his sharp elbow jutting into Thaddeus's face. But Julius aims a kick at Demetrius's back, and he goes down. Then, in a flash of silver, Helene's holding one knife to Marcus's neck and the other to his groin.
Let go of my hair, she says, or I'll relieve you of your manhood.
Marcus releases the ice-blonde curl and whispers something in Helene's ear. And just like that, her confident air dissolves. The knife at Marcus's throat falters, and he grabs her face in his hands and kisses her. I'm so disgusted that for a moment all I can do is gape and try not to vomit. Then a muffled scream erupts from Helene, and I tear my arms from Thaddeus and Julius. In a second, I'm past them both, shoving Marcus away from Helene, landing blow after satisfying blow on his face. Between my punches, Marcus is laughing, and Helene is wiping at her mouth frenziedly. Leander pulls at my shoulders, rapidly demanding a turn at the snake. Behind me, Demetrius is back on his feet, trading punches with Julius, who overpowers him, shoving his pale head to the ground. Varys comes hurtling out of the crowd, his giant body thudding into Julius and knocking him down, a bull ramming through a fence. I spot Tristus's tattoo and Dex's dark skin, and all hell breaks loose. Then someone hisses, "Commandant!" Varys and Julius lurch to their feet. I shove away from Marcus, and Helene stops clawing at her face. The snake staggers up slowly, his eyes darkening into twin pools of bruise. My mother cuts through the skulls, coming straight for Helene and me.
"Victorious! Aquila!"
She spits our names like fruit gone bad.
"Explain!"
"No explanation, Commandant, sir."
Helene and I say at the same time. I look past her, into the distance as I've been trained to, and her cold glare bores into me with the delicacy of a blunt knife. From his spot behind the Commandant, Marcus smirks, and I clench my jaw. If Helene is whipped because of his depravity, I'll hold off on deserting just so I can kill him.
"Eighth bell is minutes away."
The Commandant turns her gaze to the rest of the armory.
"You will compose yourselves and report to the amphitheatre. Any more incidents like this, and those involved will be shipped to Koth forthwith. Understood?"
"Yes, sir."
The skulls file out quietly. As fivers, we all did 6 months' guard duty at Koth Prison, far to the north. None of us would risk being sent there for something as stupid as a graduation day brawl.
"Are you all right?"
I ask Hel when the Commandant's out of earshot.
"I want to rip my face off and replace it with one that's never been touched by that swine."
"You need someone else to kiss you, is all," I say, before realizing how that sounds.
Not that I'm volunteering. I mean..."
"Yeah, I got it."
Helene rolls her eyes. Her jaw goes tight, and I wish I'd kept my mouth shut about the kissing.
"Thanks, by the way," she says, "for punching him."
I'd have killed him if the Commandant hadn't shown up. Her eyes are warm when she looks at me, and I'm about to ask her what Marcus whispered in her ear when Zack passes us. He fiddles with his brown hair and slows, as if he wants to say something. But I look at him with murder in my eyes, and after a few seconds, he turns away. Minutes later, Helene and I join the senior skulls lining up outside the amphitheatre's entrance, and the armory brawl is forgotten. We march into the amphitheatre to the applause of family, students, city officials, the Emperor's emissaries, and an honor guard of nearly 200 legionnaires. I meet Helene's eyes and see my own astonishment mirrored there. It is surreal to be here on the field instead of watching enviously from the stands. The sky above burns brilliant and clean without a single cloud from horizon to horizon. Flags festoon the theatre's heights, the red and gold pennant of Jen's Tyre snapping in the wind beside the black, diamond-emblazoned standard of Blackleth. My grandfather, General Quinn Veturius, head of Gens Veturia, sits in a shaded box in the front row. About 50 of his closest relatives, brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, are arrayed around him. I don't have to see his eyes to know he's taking my measure, checking the angle of my sim, scrutinizing the fit of my armor. After I was chosen for Blackcliff, Grandfather took one look at my eyes and recognized his daughter in them. He brought me into his home when Mother refused to bring me into hers. No doubt she was enraged that I had survived when she assumed she was rid of me. I spent every leave training with Grandfather, enduring beatings and harsh discipline, but gaining, in return, a distinct edge over my classmates. He knew I would need that edge. Few of Blackcliff students have uncertain parentage, and none had ever been raised among the tribes. Both facts made me an object of curiosity and ridicule. But if anyone dared treat me poorly because of my background, Grandfather put them in their place, usually with the point of his sword, and quickly taught me to do the same. He can be as heartless as his daughter, but he's the only relative I have who treats me like family. Though it's not regulation, I lift my hand in salute as I pass him, gratified when he nods in return. After a series of formation drills, the graduates march to the wooden benches at the center of the field and draw cims, holding them high. A low rumble starts up, growing until it sounds like a thunderstorm has been unleashed in the amphitheater. It's the other Blackcliff students, pounding on their stone seats and roaring with a mix of pride and envy. Beside me, Helene and Leander both fail to suppress grins. Amid the noise, silence descends in my head. It's a strange silence, infinitely small, infinitely large, and I'm locked inside it, pacing, circling the question. Do I run? Do I desert? Far away, like a voice heard underwater, the Commandant orders us to return Sims and sit. She delivers a terse speech from a raised dais, and when it comes time to take our oaths to the Empire, I only know to stand because everyone around me does. Stay or run? I ask myself. Stay or run? I think my mouth moves along with everyone else's as they vow their blood and bodies to the Empire. The Commandant graduates us, and the cheer that erupts out of the new masks, raw and relieved, is what wrenches me from my thoughts. Farris rips off his school tags and throws them into the sky, followed by the rest of us. They fly into the air, catching the sun like a flock of silver birds. Families chant their graduates' names. Helene's parents and sisters call out, Aquila! Farris's family calls out, Candelin! I hear, Vissen! Tullius! Galerius! And then I hear a voice rising above all the rest. Vittorius! Vittorius! Grandfather stands in his box, backed by the rest of the family, reminding everyone here that one of the Empire's most powerful gens has seen a son graduate today. I find his eyes, and for once, there's no criticism there, only a fierce pride. He grins at me, wolfish and white against the silver of his mask, and I find myself smiling back, before confusion floods me and I look away. He won't be smiling if I desert.
Elias!
Helene throws her arms around me, eyes shining.
We did it! We
spot the augurs in the same moment, and her arms fall away. I've never seen all 14 at once, and my stomach dips. Why are they here? Their hoods are thrown back, revealing their unsettlingly stark features, and, led by Kane, they ghost across the grass and form a half-circle around the Commandant's dais. The cheers of the audience fade into a questioning hum. My mother watches, her hand idle on her sim hilt. When Kane mounts the dais, she steps aside as if she expected him. Kane raises his hand for silence, and in seconds, the crowd goes mute. From where I sit on the field, he's a bizarre spectre, so frail and ashen. But when he speaks, his voice rings out across the amphitheater with a force that makes everyone sit up.
From among the battle-hardened youth, there shall rise the foretold, he says. The greatest emperor, scourge of our enemies, commander of a host most devastating, and the Empire shall be made whole. So the augurs foretold 500 years ago, as we drew the stones of this school from the shuddering earth. And so the foretelling shall come to pass. The line of Emperor Tyus 21st will fail.
A near mutinous buzz rolls through the crowd. If anyone but an augur had questioned the Emperor's line, he'd have already been struck down. The legionnaires of the Honor Guard bristle, hands on their weapons. But at one look from Cain, they settle back, a pack of barely cowed dogs.
Tyus 21st shall have no direct male issue, Cain says. Upon his death, the empire will fall unless a new warrior emperor is chosen. Tyus the First, father of our empire, and pater of Gens Tyre, was the finest fighter of his time. He was tested, tempered, and tried before he was deemed fit to rule. The people of the Empire expect no less of their new leader.
Bleeding, burning skies. Behind me, Tristus elbows an open-mouthed Dex triumphantly. We all know what Cain will say next, but I still don't believe what I'm hearing.
Thus, the time for the trials has come.
The amphitheater explodes, or at least it sounds like it's exploded, because I've never heard anything so loud. Tristus bellows,
I told you!
At Dex, who looks as if someone smashed him over the head with a hammer. Leander shouts,
Who? Who?
Marcus laughs, a smug cackle that makes me yearn to stab him. Helene has a hand clapped over her mouth, her eyes comically wide as she grasps for words. Cain's hand comes up again, and again the crowd falls deathly silent.
The trials are upon us, he says. To ensure the future of the Empire, the new Emperor must be at the peak of his strength, as Tyus was when he took the throne. Thus do we turn to our battle-hardened youth, our newest masks. But not all shall vie for this great honor. Only the greatest of our graduates are worthy, the strongest. Only four. Of these four aspirants, one will be named the Foretold. One will swear fealty and serve as the Bloodshrike. The others will be lost as leaves on the wind. This, too, we have seen.
My blood begins to pound in my ears.
Elias Veturius, Marcus Farrar, Helene Aquila, Zacharias Farrar.
He calls our names in the order we're ranked.
Rise and come forward.
The amphitheater is dead quiet. Numbly, I stand, shutting out the searching looks of my classmates, the glee on Marcus's face, the indecision on Zach's. The field of battle is my temple. The sword point is my priest. Helene's back is ramrod straight, but she looks to me, to Cain, to the commandant. At first, I think she's frightened. Then I notice the shine in her eyes, the spring in her step. When Hel and I were fivers, a barbarian raiding party took us prisoner. I was trussed like a festival day goat, but they tied Helene's hands in front of her with twine and propped her on the back of a pony, assuming she was harmless. That night, she used the twine to garrote three of our jailers and broke the necks of the other three with her bare hands.
They always underestimate me,
she said afterward, sounding puzzled. She was right, of course. It's a mistake even I make. Hel's not frightened, I realize. She's euphoric. She wants this. The walk to the stage takes too little time. In seconds, I'm standing in front of Cain with the others.
To be chosen as an aspirant for the trials is to be granted the greatest honor the Empire has to offer.
Cain looks at each one of us, but it seems like his gaze lingers longest on me.
In exchange for this great gift, the augurs require an oath. that as aspirants, you will see the trials through until the Emperor is named. The penalty for breaking this oath is death. You must not undertake this oath lightly, Cain says. If you wish, you may turn and leave this podium. You will remain a mask, with all the respect and honor accorded to those of that title. Another will be chosen in your place. It is, in the end, your choice. Your choice. Those two words shake me to my marrow. Tomorrow you will have to make a choice between deserting and doing your duty, between running from your destiny and facing it. Cain doesn't mean doing my duty as a mask. He wants me to choose between taking the trials and deserting. You devious red-eyed devil. I want to be free of the Empire, but how can I find freedom if I take the trials? If I win and become Emperor, I'll be tied to the Empire for life. And if I swear fealty, I'll be changed to the Emperor as the second in command, the Bloodshrike. Or I'll be a leaf lost in the wind, which is just a fancy augur way of saying, dead. Reject him, Elias. Run. By this time tomorrow, you'll be miles away. Cain watches Marcus, and the augur's head is tilted as if he's listening to something beyond our ken. Marcus Farrar, you are ready. It's not a question. Marcus kneels and draws his sword, offering it up to the augur, his eyes glinting with a strangely exultant zeal, as if he's already been named emperor. Repeat after me, Cain says. I, Marcus Farrar, swear by blood and by bone, by my honor and the honor of Jens Farrar, that I will dedicate myself to the trials, that I will see them through until the Emperor is named, or my body lies cold. Marcus repeats the vow, his voice echoing in the breathless silence of the amphitheater. Cain closes Marcus's hands over his blade, pressing until blood drips from his palms. A moment later, Helene kneels, offering her sword, repeating the vow, her voice singing out across the field as clearly as a bell at dawn. The augur turns to Zack, who looks at his brother for a long moment, before nodding and taking the oath. Suddenly, I'm the only one of the four aspirants still standing, and Cain is before me, awaiting my decision. Like Zack, I hesitate. Cain's words come back to me. You are woven through our dreams, a thread of silver in a tapestry of night. Is becoming emperor my destiny, then? How can such a destiny lead to freedom? I have no desire to rule. The very idea of doing so is repellent to me. But then my future as a deserter is no more appealing. You will become everything you hate. Evil, merciless, cruel. Do I trust Cain when he says I will find freedom if I take the trials? At Blackleaf we learn to classify people. Civilian, combatant, enemy, ally, informer, defector. Based on that, we decide our next steps. But I have no understanding of the augur. I don't know his motivations, his desires. The only thing I have is my instinct, which tells me that in this matter, at least, Cain wasn't lying. Whether his prediction is true or not, he trusts that it is. And since my gut tells me to trust him, albeit grudgingly, there's only one decision that makes sense. My eyes never leaving Cain's, I drop to my knees, draw my sword, and run the blade across my palm. My blood falls to the dais in a rapid drip. I, Elias Vittorius, swear, by blood
and by bone.